It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, Dr. Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, promoting the community, supporting business development, and growing opportunity for Northwest Missouri. The NCED Business Support Team is at your service. More at nottoway.biz. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, home to Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park features the Seacrest 18 Golf Course and the Watson 9 Executive Course. More information about Mazingo's golf offerings and tee times is available at mazingolake.com. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. Listeners, you know that we highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region, and there's so much to celebrate. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXCV, KRNW, wish each of you a wonderful and beautiful holiday season and a happy new year with your family and friends. I am pleased to welcome you to the December edition of our show. We'll provide two segments, as we usually do. In segment one, we feature Sister Nancy Rose Gukwa from the Benedictine Monastery. In segment two, we feature Kristen Peltz and B.K. Taylor from Northwest Missouri State University's Wellness Services. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Sister Nancy Rose Gukwa from the Benedictine Monastery. Born and raised in New York, Sister Nancy Rose was a member of the first class that admitted women to the United States Military Academy at West Point. After graduation in 1980, she served on active duty for over 6 years and continued her Army career as a member of the reserves, eventually retiring as Lieutenant Colonel. She earned her MBA, and after her active duty service, she enjoyed a career in the financial and banking industries, first in New York City, and later in St. Louis. Heeding the call to religious life, she entered the Benedictine Sisters of Perpetual Adoration in Clyde, Missouri in 2006. And since entering religious life, she has served in the altar bread department and now currently serves as the congregation's development director, answering prayer requests from around the world. Sister Nancy Rose, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I've heard a lot of information. I've heard about nicknames and so on. We'll get into that. But okay. just a little bit about the background first on the history of the Benedictine Sisters of Perpetual Adoration. I want to start there because the role in Nottoway County is so important, and we'll kind of get into your life story about how you got there, but let's just start with the Benedictine Sisters, a little bit of history there.
Okay, sure. Well, our sisters first came to the United States from Switzerland in 1874. Okay. Our founder mother, Mary Anselma, and four other sisters came with her at the invitation of the men's Benedictine religious community in nearby Conception, Missouri, because they needed teachers for the immigrant children. The sisters first had to learn English, of course, which they did. But their real desire was to establish a ministry of prayer, which is our primary mission today.
Well, and I know that the primary mission, the ministry of prayer, is so very important in your current role. I want to ask you a few questions about what kinds of prayer requests you get. But before we get there,
sure. How
many sisters live at the monastery in Clyde, and how do they support that life of prayer?
Well, many years ago at our peak, we had over 350 in the congregation with 200 at Clyde. But right now, there's 55 sisters at Clyde.
Okay. And in terms of supporting the life of prayer, how do those 55 sisters support that life?
Well, we financially support ourselves in three ways. Our primary means of income is that we make and sell altar breads, or otherwise known as communion hosts, which we sell and ship across the country. And we've been in that business for over 100 years. And we also have low-gluten altar bread for people with celiac. But the second way we support ourselves is we make and sell products such as soap, lotion, lip balm, and candles, which we sell online and in our gift shop. And the third way we support ourselves is through the generosity of our donors, who also send us their prayer requests.
Well, each way is certainly very important to the livelihood. I know that in the first way, for those that do go to various churches and so on across the country, there's a good chance that when you go and partake that perhaps your product will be there
that
people are traveling around and taking in.
Right.
Secondarily, though, I will tell you, sister, that as we think about gifts and products for guests at Northwest Missouri State University, we think about the area, and always we think about your product of soaps and so on, saying that's part of Nottoway County, of Maryville, and that therefore that can be a part of a gift basket to say welcome to the area, Northwest Missouri, and then certainly that third area of the generosity of donors and so on, so very important. Let's jump to your childhood. We're talking about Staten Island, five siblings growing up. Talk a little bit about growing up and what it was like in Staten Island at the time, too.
Okay. Well, I was born in Brooklyn and grew up in Staten Island, New York, along with my five siblings. And my parents were blue-collar workers, probably most families in my neighborhood were at that time. My dad worked for the phone company as a lineman. And my mom returned to work as a legal secretary once all of the six kids were in school. So we went to St. Patrick's School on Staten Island and were taught by the nuns, wonderful, wonderful nuns. But I don't remember ever being asked if I ever wanted to become a nun at the time. But financially in our family, things were tight, and I knew how important it was to get a college education, especially to earn a good living. And at the time, I wanted to grow up and become a lawyer.
So obviously you knew about the importance of education and continuing education. The family supported that, and you're a pretty good student, yes?
I tried to be.
Okay. And eventually you choose West Point. Why?
Right. Well, timing had a lot to do with it because I was a high school senior in the fall of 1975, and that was when Congress passed the law allowing women for the first time to enter all the service academies, including West Point. So my dad saw that on TV that day and suggested to me, hey, you might look into this. So I did. I sent away for the brochure to West Point, and when I got it, I was really captivated by its motto, which is duty, honor, and country, and the pictures of the famous graduates, MacArthur, Bradley, Eisenhower, and others. And they promised to build you into a leader of character. So I was hooked. I wanted to become a leader of character and serve the nation. And as you probably know, once you graduate from West Point, you have to serve 5 years active duty. And I thought, gee, that's great. Get the leadership training and then to put it to good use by serving the country. So I applied for admission and took all the tests. I was fortunate enough to get a nomination from my congressman and entered with that first class of women on July 7th, 1976.
And so looking back to July of 1976, did you understand, wow, I'm going to be part of this first class of women. I'm a trailblazer. This is really important. You know, thinking about in that era, Billie Jean King being a trailblazer in her own right and so on. Did you think like that or just saying, I want to go get a good college education here?
I didn't think of blazing any trails, although I was very aware that there hadn't been women before us. And I just figured I'd put my best foot forward and, you know, see what happened.
And so what kinds of upsides but also challenges that you encounter at West Point during those years?
Lots of challenges. For example, the physical challenges. And it was challenging for both men and women. Like the morning physical training, for example, we'd often have to run anywhere between 2 to 4 miles, carrying rifles, wearing our combat boots up and down the very steep hills of West Point. So out of a freshman class of 1,400, there were only 119 of us women. And most of the upperclassmen didn't want us there to begin with. So they tried to harass us so much that we would quit. So 4 years later, though, many women did leave. We graduated 62 out of the original 119. About half the women, about 30% of the women, the men rather, also didn't make it. But the challenging thing for me was, no matter how well you did, the men still said, you don't belong here. So it was a little discouraging, but, you know.
What's your sense, after you graduated, and we'll talk about your career after West Point, but after you graduated, do you feel, did female leaders reach out to you and ask for your experience and guidance, or do you think it improved over the years, or did it take just a long time to kind of get to that?
I think it took a while to get to that point, but I think women have come a long way since then, and of course West Point has come a long way since then. All for the good, I would add.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
Your military career after West Point, help our listeners of All Things Northwest understand what you did after West Point.
Okay, well, when you graduate West Point, you're commissioned a second lieutenant in the Army, and you have to serve 5 years. So I initially went to a logistics training in Fort Lee, Virginia, and after that I went to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, which is the home of the 82nd Airborne Division, and I was in that division. I became jump master qualified and have 32 parachute jumps. And after that, I was assigned to a logistics unit in Germany near the town of Kitzingen. And after that tour, I had served my 5 years active duty. So at the time, I left active duty but stayed in the Army Reserves to pursue a business career.
And so I'm still stuck on the 32 parachute jumps here and so on, but do you get in parachutes now? Do you jump today?
My priorist would not let me get in a parachute again.
I get it. But obviously having that training goes with your entire life and career, is that it all kind of builds. And as you were thinking about after active duty, what did you do after active duty?
Well, as you mentioned, I had gotten my MBA while I was on active duty at Fort Bragg. Right. So afterwards, I moved to New York City, became a mutual funds accounting manager with a large bank. And after doing that for 5 years, I was ready for another challenge and received a job offer from an insurance company in St. Louis. So I did well there. And caught the eye of the CEO and eventually served as the chief operating officer of their broker-dealer subsidiary. And by then, I was a vice president with the company.
So very eclectic, and you're in the corporate world now and doing quite well. And then you say, gosh, what about religious life? So talk about that, the calling to religious life and how that came about.
That's a good question, because what happened was the higher I climbed on the corporate ladder, the emptier it seemed to me. But my spiritual life was deepening. I was attending weekly Bible study, going to Mass daily. Meanwhile, my company had gotten taken over by a bigger insurance company, so I was eligible for a severance package, which enabled me to take time off and discern where God was calling me. So I was still assigned in the reserves. I was working at the U.S. Army Transportation Command at Scott Air Force Base in Illinois at the time. And I had some time off that weekend, so I went on a religious retreat. And it was while I was on that retreat that a priest asked me point blank, "Have you ever considered serving in the religious life?" And I just looked at him, and I knew in my heart that that's what I was meant to do at that moment. And then everything became clear. So then I had to find what religious order to join. I went to look at several in St. Louis. Nothing appealed to me, but he suggested, well, why don't you go to Clyde, Missouri, and look at the Benedictine Sisters? So I did. And the minute I set foot in their chapel, it was so beautiful, I just broke down in tears. I felt, after all this time, I was finally home.
I'm amazed, you know, you talk about being born in Brooklyn, going to Staten Island, obviously, you know, going to West Point, and then being stationed various locations, going into the corporate world, coming into the Missouri border, St. Louis, and then going on that retreat, and then saying, why don't you go to Clyde, Missouri, wherever that is. I'm sure you're thinking like, okay, I need to continue to go west. But back to Staten Island, so the nuns that were teaching, no one ever said, would you ever consider going in this path? It wasn't until this later moment that
That's right. Yeah, I think over the years, though, my faith was deepening, and that's what was happening. God was working on me in his slow and sure way.
And you felt it, and you, like you said, you knew that, you know, whatever was happening on the professional side, the personal and the spiritual side was strengthening.
That's right.
You were feeling something and seeing something ahead.
Right. I really was. That's true.
And so you made the decision to come to Clyde and talk about how that went down, you know, making that transition, and then a typical day in the monastery.
Sure.
Life for you.
Okay. Well, as you can imagine, it was a dramatic transition, moving from New York to a big city of St. Louis, and then to the country of Clyde, Missouri.
I see no differences whatsoever.
So that was a transition. But then I had to get rid of all my stuff that I had worked a lifetime to accumulate, my furniture, my household goods, my clothes, and my car. But once I divested myself, I gave most of it away. It was very freeing, surprisingly. But living and working among so many sisters, that was another big change because I had my own home. I lived by myself, and now I'm living with 54 other sisters. So that was a bit of an adjustment. But, you know, they say life in community, it'll wear off your rough edges, and I think it did.
Good.
Yeah.
And so a typical day today, what's it look like?
Well, my day starts around 4:30, which is my favorite time for personal prayer. But we pray five times throughout the day as a community. So the first community prayer starts at 6:30. Then we have Mass at 7:30. Our day hour prayer is at noon. Our evening prayer is at 5:30. Our last prayer of the day is at 7:30. And in between, we work. We also have time for personal prayer, spiritual reading, maybe a little recreation even.
And as you describe all of that, there are certainly similarities, I suppose, with military life, and I suppose even with corporate life, and some differences. Right?
There's a lot of similarities both to the military life and corporate life and religious life, but especially the military and religious life, because they're both a life of service, obedience, and sacrifice. They're both rigorous, pretty disciplined, take a lot of commitment. In the military, of course, your ultimate obedience is to your chain of command, you know, and at the top is the commander-in-chief, the president. But as a sister, of course, your obedience is to your local superior, and then ultimately to God, you know, who's the supreme commander-in-chief there. But they both call for living simply, and they both allow you lots of opportunity to get along with people of very different backgrounds. But there's a big difference in spite of all those similarities. The military does have an end date, your retirement, or when you leave service, whereas when you're a sister, you take final vows, they're for life.
Right. And so, sister, your mention of the call to service for both military and for what you're doing today, I want to come to that in a minute. I do have to pause. I heard someone, there's a nickname out there, the nun with a gun. Is that an accurate nickname? Where'd that come from?
That's what they called me. There was a period of time I had a two-year overlap where I had already joined the monastery, but I was still serving in the reserves. I had two more years to go. And so my military compatriots would tease me, especially when we did our weapon training. They would call me the nun with the gun, and that kind of stuck.
it's a great nickname, but it comes back, though, to service. And you've had that service at the military side. But as you think about heeding the call of service, talk about you, and you've mentioned a little bit about the transition, but what really drove you to that heeding that call of service, and then how can others heed the call of service?
Well, when you heed the call to service, it's funny, but it gives your life a really deeper meaning, you know, when you serve God or when you serve a cause bigger than yourself. So serving not only is it important to the community, but it's also very fulfilling. And there's lots of ways that people can be called to serve, not just in the military or in a convent. For example, people can serve just in their local community. They can serve at a church, at their hospital, Habitat for Humanity, serving the poor in some way. We just had an election this fall. They could serve at the polls or on a political campaign. You can support one of the many veterans organizations in the area as well. And all of those ways to serve are not bound by ages. But if for anyone discerning a religious vocation, I'd recommend contacting your local pastor or religious community, such as ours, to learn what the requirements are and even how else God may be calling you. And for those who are listening, if anyone's even curious about religious life or wants to find out more about it, just contact us. It's not an easy choice to make in this day and age, but it never hurts to inquire because you never know where an inquiry will lead.
Well, and it's pretty obvious, too. Maybe a visit to Clyde, like for you, can be life-changing, right?
It surely was.
Listeners, you're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCV Maryville, KRN W. Chillicothe. I'm John Jasinski, your host, talking with Sister Nancy Rose Gukwa from the Benedictine Monastery. Sister Nancy Rose, your present position is serving as the congregation's development director, answering prayer requests from around the world. Can you describe for our listeners of All Things Northwest, what does that really mean? I mean, do you truly get prayer requests from around the world? How do you receive them? And then how do you answer them?
Oh, we receive prayer requests from just about anywhere you can imagine. Our most common ways, I guess, are by letter or by phone, but we also receive quite a few of them over the email and through social media. And whatever's important to people, whatever's giving them pain in their lives, they ask us to pray for them. And we're happy to do it. And for those who are out there listening, if they have prayer requests, they can simply go to our website, benedictinesisters.org, and leave us their prayer requests. They can pray with us in person if they'd like, if they live near Clyde, or they can join us in prayer with our podcast, which is also on our website, or they could share in the spiritual fruits of our spiritual lives by looking into our Oblate program or subscribing to our complimentary magazine that comes out every other month called Spirit and Life, all available on our website.
Many, many different ways to connect, essentially.
Right.
Can you share any interesting prayer requests or any that come to your mind off the top of your head? That
the most common are the recent fires we've had in California.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people lost their lives, lost their homes. So that's very common that we will receive that particular prayer request.
And I'm curious, you said that many of them come through the phone.
Oh, yes.
Or by letter. Is that?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Very interesting, and we invite our listeners to reach out to Sister Nancy Rose and all those serving. Anything else to add in terms of your service, your life, your vocation, and really just thoughts for our listeners of All Things Northwest?
Well, consider a life of service. Consider serving your community or your fellow human being in some way. And you'll have a much deeper and happier life and ultimately serve one another in love as God has taught us to do.
And I really enjoy your message there. As we talk to our students at Northwest Missouri State University, what we see from our students is there is a desire, a need to serve, and they serve in so many different ways, and we're enthralled by that. But we thank you for your service and for being part of All Things Northwest, Sister Nancy Rose Gukwa. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
When we return to All Things Northwest, we'll visit with Kristen Peltz and B.K. Taylor from Northwest's Wellness Services. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCB Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, promoting the community, supporting business development, and growing opportunity for Northwest Missouri. The NCED Business Support Team is at your service. More at nottoway.biz. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, home to Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park features the Seacrest 18 Golf Course and the Watson 9 Executive Course. More information about Mazingo's golf offerings and tee times is available at mazingolake.com.
Welcome back to the December edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, John Chasinski. We'll now visit with Kristen Peltz and B.K. Taylor from Northwest Missouri State University's Wellness Services. Kristen is the Assistant Director of Wellness Services and Counseling. As a counselor, she has worked in an inpatient hospital setting, in community mental health, and prior to starting at Northwest Missouri State University in October 2015, she was in private practice. Kristen received her undergraduate degree in psychology sociology as well as her Master of Science degree in counseling psychology from right here at Northwest Missouri State. Therapy interests include working in the areas of LGBTQ+, depression, anxiety, personal growth, and relationship dynamics. B.K. Taylor is an assistant director of wellness services and prevention, outreach, and education. He earned his bachelor's degree from Northwest Missouri State University in 2010 with a major in psychology. B.K. also earned his master's in higher education leadership from Northwest in 2013. Stepping into the role of preventionist, B.K. focuses on developing students' wellness and giving them the tools to be the best that they can be. Kristen Peltz, B.K. Taylor, thank you and welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you, Dr. J.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And first and foremost, I just want to say thank you to you and your team for what you do on a daily basis in carrying out Northwest's mission. We know that you guys do so much that really sometimes people don't fully understand. That's kind of our role today, is to really think about what you guys do, where we're at from a student employee perspective, and really broader community perspective across the nation. So we'll kind of get into that. But first, we'll just start talking about wellness services. I think our listeners of All Things Northwest hear wellness services and maybe conjure up different images. And so, Kristen, BK, can you guys talk about what wellness services does for Northwest?
Well, first, I think it's important that people recognize we work in an integrated system. And so we have our clinic services, we have prevention, outreach, and education, and our counseling services are all housed through wellness services. And we think that's critical because it's about looking at the student, the whole student, and health. Overall health is physical, emotional, mental, and social. And so we need to approach it that way.
Got it. BK, anything else to add?
I think Kristen got it, yeah.
Well, BK, let's talk about the state of mental health at Northwest. I know you have some statistics, some strengths and concerns, and maybe talk about those.
Yeah, so we do a lot of research at Northwest to assess, you know, how our students are doing and things that might be a challenge that lies ahead of us. And as we've done some research in the Missouri Assessment for College Health Behaviors, we've identified certain attributes. So students have self-reported 45% experiencing anxiety, 23% experiencing depression, and 41% stating that they have seen friends or other students who have had suicidal thoughts and behaviors. And it's the data that really begins to kind of set a tone that is concerning for us. You know, we have these elements that are really present in the student's experience. But not only have we seen this in the data, we've seen it in our own experiences. We've started to assess the data of what it looks like coming into our own building. So we have these emergency situations, which we call triage cases, where students walk in a state of crisis or concern. We've seen that increase by 221% over the last 3 years, and really outgrow our ability to even manage it in a lot of ways, and really has set a very challenging tone and some substantial concerns that have been trying to engage with in the last year.
And so that kind of whole lead area about the increases, dramatic increases in many respects, does set the tone for what you guys do on a daily basis. Kristen, I've talked with many colleagues at the presidential level across the country, public and private institutions, 2- and 4-year institutions, and frankly, a lot of K-12 leaders, superintendents, and principals. What I've heard from them, and I would say it's anecdotal, but also some research and statistics, is that we're not different than anybody else, that they're all feeling it across the country. Can you talk about how what BK was saying on statistics, how does that look relative to the rest of the country.
And you're absolutely right. This is not unique to Northwest. This is happening across the country. And there is research to bear that out. We know that the demand is outpacing that ability to deliver those services by over 7% on an ongoing basis. We know that retention becomes a huge piece of that. And again, not just at Northwest, but across the country. So we recognize that over 64% of students who are not able to maintain in college and have to leave, that they've said of those 64%, they're saying at least a part of that was due to mental health difficulties. And so we know that this is an ongoing problem and one that the trend is not going a direction that we care to see.
And so, you know, I suppose we can talk about the impacts on Northwest's retention rate or graduation rate and all of that, or anybody else's across the country, but really locking in on and focusing on the personal side. Kristen, maybe talking about Wellness Services' approach to the student in need and really focusing on the individual.
And that's so critical. We don't want to get hung up in the statistics, right? We need to recognize how important it is to do that intervention. So we talk about getting upstream of that problem. We talk about it as soon as we can identify it with students, what are we doing it for?
That's okay.
So what can we do for prevention to make sure these things, that the students aren't going in that direction? And so as we started, the idea of having an integrated care system at Wellness, we're able to catch people at many different places. So if a student, say, comes in even with a sore throat, our nurses and our clinic providers are very astute. They ask specific questions about where a student is, mental health, stress, anxiety, depression. So they ask those questions. And so they can intervene much earlier. There are times when we'll even walk that student down to a counselor if they're willing to do that. And so we can have that conversation when they're right there in the building. And so, again, our idea is to get that midstream, upstream, and have that early intervention piece.
So prevention, very important. Integrated care, very important. But, Kristen, we also, Northwest has all-employee meetings twice a year, one in August, one in January. In our August all-employee meeting, you were talking about a stepped care model. Help me, help our listeners of All Things Northwest understand, what is stepped care model? What's that mean and what does it include?
The stepped care model is this understanding that we have to go beyond just this traditional counselor setting, that a student, if they are having difficulties, that it isn't just, gosh, let's get you in to see a counselor and then everything is going to be okay. This recognition that overall well-being also cannot be just housed within Wellness Services, that this is something that we all need to address across campus. So the stepped care model is relatively new. It's been, the model itself has been in the UK and Australia, up in Canada for a little bit longer, just coming into the States. But this idea that when we do this initial consult with a student, they come in for services, that we really assess not just putting them into that traditional model, right, I'll see you next week and we'll talk about this, but really working at breaking that down. So there are times when it might be a much better match for the student to maybe attend some workshops. And so we've developed a series of workshops that we have on campus that we can refer them into. We're working at updating our website, so we have those resources there. So a lot of the students really enjoy using the apps, and so we've listed all those as far as mental health issues. And so those kinds of things in the stepped care model. Also, we've been working across campus with some other stakeholders. We're working with School of Health Science and Wellness with a peer coaching model. So some of the students, when they come in, may be referred over to a peer coach. We're working within Student Affairs as an example, and we've always worked closely together, but doing things within Res Life, REC comes to mind. We have a Bearcat Buddy system that we're using, and that program is just making a direct referral over to Foster Fitness and having a student worker there meet up with one of our students and help them find their way around and get them more comfortable in that setting.
And so that more holistic look at wellness, if you will, and again, it goes back to the integrated care. BK, I'm curious, it's just not the focus on mental illness, but that overall focus or cultivation on well-being, if you will, maybe talk a little bit about how we're addressing well-being more holistically.
Yeah.
And Kristen, you've already addressed it a little bit, but kind of go on from there.
Yeah, I think it's a shift of mindset. And I think it's been something that we've been doing in health for some time now, that it's not just this idea of bad health and not being sick, but it's about being well. And
that's the population health. I mean, we hear that as consumers, population health, that's a little bit of it, right?
Exactly. So we've grown comfortable talking about our health and what we can do to exercise and generate positive health. But as soon as we bring up the term mental health, we go to these kind of negative connotations. But the term mental health is that same spectrum, that it's not just illness, but it's this idea of cultivating something positive. And that's really the goal here, is to shift the way we're thinking about this. It's not waiting until the crisis arises, but how do you develop as a person so that you can be the best version of yourself?
Skills of resilience, for example, are very important, I know. And as listeners of All Things Northwest, you know, resilience isn't just, you know, college students, it's faculty and staff, it's our community members, it's all of us that really are trying to uplift each other in our communities. We use a PERMA model, P-E-R-M-A, and from an acronym point of view, I'm sure our listeners are saying, what's that? BK, can you kind of talk about PERMA and resilience?
Yeah. Well, I'll start off with a little bit with resilience. I think what's really incredible about it is if you look at the literature, resilience is often identified as everyday miracles or ordinary magic. And I absolutely love that concept, that it's this extraordinary ability to bounce back from difficult situations. But even though it's special, it's not unique, which means that it's special because it allows you to do this extraordinary attribute, but all of us can cultivate it. So we can overcome obstacles and we can really learn the skills to do that. And one of the philosophies we take to engage with that is PERMA, which is from Dr. Martin Seligman's well-being theory. And PERMA stands for positive emotion, engagement, relationships, meaning, and accomplishment. So these five variables of life.
Repeat those again for our listeners.
Positive emotion, engagement, relationships, meaning, and accomplishment. And these five variables are the variables that, let me start that over. These five variables make up well-being and those aspects of life. And well-being is a very complicated concept. It's like weather. You can't measure weather. You can measure parts of weather to get to a whole. And that's true about well-being. You measure these five elements to come up with a full concept. And by cultivating them, you can become more well.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by your comment there, BK, comparing well-being to weather, because many of us, you know, with today's Fitbits and everything else, we understand how many steps we have and so on from a physical point of view, but what about the other components of well-being and what does all that mean? Kristen, you referenced in an earlier response that you guys are working with, you know, School of Health Science and Wellness, Student Affairs, the Bearcat Buddy Program you mentioned, and so on. You also work with our university police department, I know, and maybe you can reference that. But I also want to get into a grant that we received, too. So, again, Kristen, maybe just helping us understand that it isn't just wellness services, but it's really a campus-wide effort. And, by the way, community effort, too, because we work with SSM Health, St. Francis Hospital, Maryville, too.
Yes, we work very closely with them, and we're very fortunate that we have that resource here in town. So you're right. So some of the things that we'd already mentioned, but we also, as far as working with University Police Department, they're incredibly helpful. Typically, when people think about police department, they see it more as a punitive or again an after effect, where at Northwest it's a much different scenario. And so our officers are trained in crisis intervention, which is a 40-hour course. Everyone goes through that. Chief Green is a huge advocate of mental well-being, and so they interact with the students, and there's that underlying core that's always there, that well-being of the student. And so there are times when they will check on a student if they're concerned about their safety, but they also do the prevention work that BK is involved with. They're also a piece of that. And so, again, on this spectrum, we'll have students who are struggling on that one end, but we also have all the other students who, again, we're just working towards identifying well-being. We're working towards making sure they recognize there are many people across campus that they can speak with.
And I'll just say a couple things to that, to add to that, Kristen, if I may. University Police, I was just reading something recently where that critical intervention training, very intense training.
Yes, it is.
And every one of our officers has completed that training. There are very few, if any, in the state, if not the nation, that has every one of its officers having completed mm-hmm. that training. So that's just kudos to Northwest, but also helpful in this whole conversation. Also, Kristen, you're mentioning this spectrum, and I'm intrigued by that because your guys' approach to it is, you know, let's not wait till you're on the one end of the spectrum, but rather the other end of the spectrum is let's cultivate these life skills for all of us, across all elements of well-being. And do you see that working with regard to, you know, thinking about it from a spectrum point of view?
I think it's absolutely the approach that we need to take. We talk, BK and I have this conversation frequently about how is it we can make sure students understand not to wait till the crisis is there, right? How can we intervene earlier, making sure that they recognize all the resources that are there so they can work to build themselves and also be there for their peers?
Well, and you guys do a great job reaching out to our students and to many others and saying, how can we help you? One area that you're providing increased help is in suicide prevention. BK, we just recently received a grant. Maybe talk about that and what all that means.
Yeah, we're excited that we received a national grant for a substantial sum of funds to really bring this to the next level. Like you said, we have so many extraordinary things happening across Northwest. And this is about bringing them together and really taking them to the next level and elevating them. And through this, we kind of coined this vision of hope for all. And that's really what's driving this forward.
And what does hope for all mean? What does it include?
Well, if you look at the title, and as you see marketing as it comes forth in the next year, you'll see that the four is actually the letter four. And we really like to speak to that. It's actually Kristen's brilliance that is really behind this. And that four represents the students, faculty, staff, and community, and how all of these things must come and grow together for us to be this well community that we inspire to be in the next several years.
Kristen, the BK references the brilliance, and so students,
thank you, BK.
Students, faculty, staff, and community. What was your thinking behind that, and how did you get to that?
I think that the importance, recognizing, especially being in a small rural area, that we can't do this on our own, that we'll be much stronger and much more effective if we're all on the same page and working towards this together.
And speaking of working together, we also on campus have a mental health task force, and maybe talk about the role it plays, the membership, and how that was decided.
Actually, this came about over a year ago, and we'd have been having conversations about how do we make sure that just stakeholders across campus know what each other is doing, right? And so, because I know even within student affairs, we work very hard to all be going the same direction, but there has to be a plan in place in order to do that. And so then expanding that out into the campus community. And so the idea came about that if we can pull together senior leadership, and we were so fortunate that everyone we reached out to agreed to do this. And so we have five members of Northwest leadership team that sit on this. And so we have our provost. Nola Bond is our vice president of strategy, and Dr. Matt Baker, who is VP in student affairs, Dr. Juanita Simmons with DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, Andy Peterson through athletics, and then Chief Green sits on this, as does Dr. Wilmus, who is our executive director at Wellness, and BK and myself. The idea that all of these different areas on campus, if we can learn to speak the same language, if we can learn to identify what's going on across campus and how we can step in to do that. And we really wanted to make sure that while students, obviously, every student every day, we want to make sure that faculty, staff, and community are involved in this as well.
Well, it's pretty obvious that integrated care, prevention-based, all that you guys are doing is so very important. I know that the grant also includes some other areas. Maybe talk about art and resiliency training, BK.
Yeah, we're very excited about this. I think the first one is what we call the Art Awareness Project, which is such a unique element of this grant. Basically, it's bringing this all to a visual point, that we will look to a space within our community that's not all yet been decided and see something that represents the change that we're taking, that when you look at it, you're going to think about your own well-being and how to cultivate that. And every student, faculty, and staff member, and community member who walks past it will be different. And then we have the Northwest Resiliency Training that we're working to cultivate. And this is really about creating that flip side. We do a lot of trainings to help people respond to students in crisis, but how do we train people up on how to cultivate well-being? And that's the vision behind this training. And not only that vision behind the training, but this idea that we can expand it to the nation. If we create something great here that works here and that we believe in here, we've got to be spreading that further so that this can be something that can change our nation.
BK, thank you. And that's a great point that, you know, we're all facing this across the country. And so it behooves us to do our good work and then spread it outward. And Kristen, anything else to add in terms of next steps as we move forward?
We're really excited that the grant is going to enable us to bring on a coordinator for the Hope for All project. And so bringing that one more person onto the team to kind of have that overview, we're excited about that. But just all of the things that it feels like we've been planting seeds all along. And so this grant is going to enable us to grow and to reap those benefits.
Also, as I think about next steps, thank you, Kristen, for that. But BK, maybe a message for individuals, for all of us, a call to action, if you will.
Yeah, I think I'd ask you and every listener and every member of this community one question, which is, what are you doing with your well-being? It's going to take each and every single one of us to change this. Dr. Baker asked me a very simple question. He said, how do you know you'll be successful in 3 years? And I said, you'll be able to feel it in the air. And I truly believe that. And that means that each one of us need to be thinking about how we cultivate joy and meaning and accomplishment within our lives.
Well, BK Taylor, thank you for that. Kristen Peltz, thanks to you. Thanks to the entire team for what you do on a daily basis to help all of us. Thank you for joining All Things Northwest.
Thank you, Dr. J.
Thank you, Dr. J.
And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, Sister Nancy Rose Guqua, Kristen Peltz, and BK Taylor. Thanks, too, to our producer, Austin Hall, a student here at Northwest, along with KXCV General Manager Rodney Harris. Friends, we here at Northwest focus on student success. Thanks for assisting us in enhancing our focus on students through your support of All Things Northwest, KXCV, KRNW, and public radio. Be a Bearcat, ladies and gentlemen. Learn, connect, care, practice civility, and show pride in Northwest, KXCV, KRNW, and public radio. I'm John Jasinski. Take good care and keep celebrating and advancing our region.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from the City of Maryville and Nottoway County Economic Development. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is produced by sports media major Austin Hall. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.